Listening to 90.1 FM, KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Also, be aware that opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers.
Give me 2 eggs. So, tomorrow I got nothing.
Do we believe that everybody should be born poor 1 week of their life? 1 week.
As you see, I'm in a wheelchair. I was hit by a train 10 years ago. And a year ago, I was hit by a truck.
There's a feeling in the pit of your stomach the first several nights that you're out there when you realize you actually are in a place where you got nowhere to go.
How do you like being at the shelter?
Kind of good. And I like it when we had our own bed, different. And when we get our new house, I'll be so happy when I have my own.
This may surprise a lot of people, but in the last school year, all of our schools here in Butte County, there's 14 different school districts, identified about 900 students, children and youth, who were in homeless situations during the course of the school year.
Welcome to the Without a Roof program, where we expose and remedy poverty, the worst form of violence. Gamble Mash here for the Without a Roof Radio program, the April 5th edition. And we have two guest speakers today on a pre-record. We have Ed Mayer, Executive Director of the Housing Authority of the County of Butte, and Dr. Robert Marbit, who had visited Chico doing some work around poverty and housing and homelessness. And you'll hear from the theme that we're looking at the impact of the HUD budgets on housing and supportive services. So look us up, Without a Roof, homepage, WOAROOF.TUMBLR.com. Guillermo Mash here for the Without a Roof radio program, and I have on the phone from his office at Forest Avenue in Chico, Ed Mayer, Executive Director of the Housing Authority of the County of Butte. Welcome to KZFR, Ed Mayer.
Morning, Bill. How you doing today?
I'm doing just fine, Ed Mayer. So, good. You know, there's a lot of angst on a lot of uncertainty around HUD budgets, Ed. And I know that's a big part of your daily job, hourly job sometimes. And I wanted to enlighten our listeners to what you foresee as impacts to freezing the budget, reducing the HUD budget, and community development grants. Those are the three things I wanted to talk about today, Ed.
Very good. Well, first of all, there's a lot at present time, at this immediate moment, there's a lot of uncertainty around the federal budget. We've seen five different budgets floated, including a proposal to use a continuing resolution to extend 2016's budget through half of 2017. Similarly, a continuing resolution to carry the budget through all of 2017. Another budget proposal to continue 2016 spending levels all the way through 2018. A secretly released HUD budget showing a $6 billion cut. And then we have two budget proposals in Congress, one sitting in the House of Representatives and one at the Senate. So there's a lot of discussion around housing budgets with no real action at this exact moment. But the biggest piece is, of course, the threat by the leaked HUD budget showing a $6 billion cut, which would include things like the Community Development Block Grant Program, which has been a very important local program for funding of all kinds of local activities, including, I believe, legal services in Northern California. Their work here is in part funded by a Community Development Block Grant. In the city of Chico, I think there's 8 entities supported by Community Development Block Grant funds, including, like I said, legal services, I think the Catalyst Domestic Violence Shelter, Torres Community Shelter. Some of the community's more essential nonprofits are supported by Community Development Block Grant funds. So anyway, so there's this great conversation around the federal budget relative to where we sit right now, and there seem to be two conversations. One is the more immediate conversation, and then which involves cuts. But the other conversation is that we've never needed housing more badly in our community, in our state, and in our country. So there's a lot of discussion at the state legislature right now about housing bills and policies. How do we move housing agendas forward? And interestingly, the state just came out with a study. It was conducted by State Department of Housing and Community Development. And the study really basically said our problem with delivery of housing in California is attitudinal. It's the people. We do not allow or accept or invite housing into our communities. The general public postures itself. We must protect our communities against affordable housing. We must protect our communities against development and developers. And we have to change that attitude, plain and simple. We have to embrace housing if we're going to address this issue at all. So very interesting, the conversations going on. So on the one hand, we're being pushed budget-wise down, and on the other hand, our need has never been greater. It would appear, though, at least for the short term, the federal government is backing off its commitments to housing as an issue. I think the general tenor in Washington is that a lot of this, supportive work on behalf of communities should really be pushed down to the state and local levels. That's what we said today.
But it seems, just kind of rolling back to your first comments, it seems, if I could kind of stratify this, it seems like the best case scenario is you maintain the same budget you have right now, and then that is indeed the best case scenario. What's the impact for the Housing Authority of Butte County here, Ed Mayor?
Well, currently, under we've received notice from HUD that we're going to receive, we should expect to receive somewhere in the neighborhood of 95% of what we normally receive for monies used to assist with payments of rental assistance for our clients. So if we're backing off 5% for the year, that means we started the year at 100% program size, about 2,100 households. We have to end up the year at 90% in order to achieve a 95% average for the year. So that means we're not leasing it all right now. Since December, we have not issued any new vouchers. The voucher holders on the street, that's it. And we won't be issuing any vouchers for at least 6 months this year and possibly the entire year. So just even the federal government backing off 5% in our programs effectively shuts down our Section 8 program for a year. Yeah, we're talking about 15 to 17 households per month
okay.
that we are shedding from the program through natural attrition. By the time we get to the end of the year, we project a loss of somewhere between 250 and 300 households. If the feds then come back and ask us to reconstitute the program, bring it back to 100%, we then have a big uphill climb to find somewhere between 250 and 300 units of housing in a community where we have a vacancy rate of less than 1%.
Yeah, it seemed those 15 to 17 a month that were being filled are going to be filled with other, you know, other folks that aren't on vouchers. That's I see that being a huge deal. I'm really sorry to hear that.
Right. So our programs have backed off. Interestingly, in addition to that, just this morning we finished doing the data entry work associated with our point-in-time homeless count. And this year we saw a real spike in the numbers of homeless we found. And in fact, when we tallied up all the surveys, we found 2,163 homeless persons when we did our point-in-time count in February. We normally find 1,100 to 1,300 households historically. We're now at 2,163, so that's a big uptick.
That's the biggest number I've seen or heard since I've been in Chico. Although I can say anecdotal evidence, Ed, after going through three of these, I really felt, and I said it on air, I interviewed you a month or so ago, I thought this was the best executed and coordinated survey you guys have done. So
we'd like to think that, and at the same time, we hope to capture some good information about these about the subpopulations.
Maybe a good closing. I sent you an article from the LA Times. I really liked it. I know I only sent it a few minutes ago. Maybe you'd already seen it, but it goes through all of the bills that are going through the legislature. I mean, is there, you know, a bill in particular that you're familiar with that we might, you know, end this conversation to give some insight to the legislative part of it, Ed?
Oh, my. Well, the one that sticks out in my mind, because it's a repeat bill, is one that's being sponsored by Tony Atkins out of San Diego. And basically, for every real estate transaction in the state, there would be a $75 transaction fee, and that transaction fee would be rolled into a pool for the development of affordable housing. This particular legislative session in California is very, very alive with housing bills. I've heard there's as many as 200 or 300 that have been introduced. Anyways, many, many housing bills. Whether any of them can get any traction remains to be seen, but the good news is we're finally talking housing in California.
One of the ones I gravitated to in this wonderful, it's an LA Times piece for folks listening, you could probably find it. They were looking at a constitutional amendment that would make it easier for local governments to raise taxes or pass bond measures the proposal. It's a female, Cecilia Aguilar Correa. I hope I got that name right. But anyway, her proposal would lower the margin needed to pass such measures from a two-thirds supermajority to 55%. This would also go on the 2018 ballot. The reason I was so excited about that, Ed, is this is such a political hot potato. I really think that we need to be looking at measures and referendums for folks to get money like they did in L.A. They just passed with a supermajority. I think it was Measure H, which gave them hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. What would you say about that, Ed?
Well, it's absolutely the right direction. There's this. We started this conversation with this idea that we are the problem, the citizenry collectively, in that we do not welcome and we don't welcome affordable housing in our communities, much less regular housing. We're always fighting the developers. No, we don't want to see our community change. We want to see it stay the same. Well, that attitude completely has to change. If we wonder why there's not enough housing out there, we have only to look at ourselves and our interaction with that public process as developments are brought forward. So the bill I was talking about earlier was Senate Bill 2 from Senator Tony Atkins out of San Diego, and there would be a $75 fee on real estate transactions anticipated to raise somewhere between $230 and $260 million a year for housing. And then, of course, Senate Bill 3 from Jim Beal out of San Jose would put a $3 billion bond out to fund low-income housing on a statewide ballot. So these are big pieces, and finally we're starting to see this conversation occur in the legislature.
Yeah, I guess I could share, because I double booked for the Homeless Task Force. I went there and I ran back here, but Charles with Hume, a good friend of mine, is presenting a tiny house concept called Simplicity Village. A message he got back from Mark Orm, Chico City Manager, about his proposal. I mean, Mark had many comments to make, but one of them that really I gravitated to that fits this conversation, Ed, was in context. He had said, you know, have you found a spot and have you talked to the neighbors and are they okay with you, you know, doing this near their property? You know, and that kind of fits into your whole overall look. These people are here. They need housing. We need to figure it out and make it work.
Yeah, and I don't mean to be critical of our neighborhoods. We can't blame them for wanting to protect their interests. But for too long in California now, our neighborhoods have dictated the pace and tenor of development. And quite frankly, sort of being liberal and populist all at once, it's not a policy that leads to sensible end results. And so while we tolerate market rate developments, we go bananas over affordable proposals and proposals to help the homeless bring in even more excitable response. We really need to change that attitude entirely and learn that we need to welcome affordable housing development in our communities and solutions for homelessness. And quite frankly, in order to dig ourselves out of the hole we're in, we're going to need a whole menu of possible solutions. This is not a one-size-fits-all silver bullet kind of thing. This is something that will involve many programs across many strata.
One more quick thing that I saw today, and then we'll do some closing comments. I think it was Northwest, but it was a county that physically that asked for homeowners that would be willing to have the county build a granny house. I think that was the term they used, a granny house to house homeless people on their property. And at first, you know how these things work. Well, no one's going to want to do that. They had almost 600 people that signed up to do it.
Wow.
So, you know, that's the kind of will and change that I think we need to see, Edmir.
Yeah, I think, I mean, if you look at California communities, and this is not just typical of California, but certainly most California communities are characterized by single-family bungalow-style subdivisions. And now one incremental step away from that kind of single-family fabric is to have accessory dwelling units, granny flats in the back. That will increase density to a certain degree. But also this idea down in L.A., this recent referendum that turned loose this idea, gave the affirmation to government that it's okay to say no to these single-family neighborhoods, and yes, we must build up, we must build dense, we must take care of our housing needs on other terms. We cannot survive on single-family home fabric anymore.
Is there any possibility, Ed, you'd have some suggestions for our listeners as a closing comment on, you know, how they could, you know, impact this process, you know, dial a congressman, go to city council meetings, write a letter, all of the above? I mean, any comments on that?
All the above, but the one in particular, the first thing that came to mind is any time an affordable housing project is proposed in the community or is brought to bear, maybe in your neighborhood, maybe near your neighborhood, whether it's for homeless or whether it's for special needs populations, or whether it's just for everyday folks who need affordable housing, get out and support it. Get out and support these projects. That would be a welcome change rather than developers having to confront a room full of angry neighbors. This is really a situation that involves that deserves developers walking into a public setting and then being welcomed by the community for what they bring.
All right, Ed Mayer, Executive Director of Housing Authority of the County of Butte. Always a pleasure, and thanks so much for all the work that you do and your staff. You have a wonderful staff down there, and blessings to you.
Thanks for saying so, Bill, and I appreciate what you do, too. Thanks for getting the word out.
Without a Roof radio program made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Cartridge World in Chico. Cartridge World provides a cost-effective, environmentally friendly alternative to purchasing new printer consumables. Specializing in the refilling of laser and inkjet cartridges and related products at 760 Mangrove in the Safeway Plaza. More information by calling 342-3333. All right, Gamo Mash for the Without a Roof radio program. It's my real pleasure. I have here in the production studio Dr. Robert Marbot. And Dr. Robert Marbot has worked on issues of homelessness for more than three decades. First as a volunteer, then as a chief of staff to San Antonio's Mayor Henry Cisneros. Next as a White House fellow to President H.W. Bush 41, the father. Later as a San Antonio City Councilperson, Mayor Pro Tem, and most recently as the founding president and CEO of Haven for Hope, the most comprehensive homeless transformational center in the United States. Welcome to KZFR, Robert Marbot.
Thank you for having me again. Nice to be actually in studio, too.
It is. It's nice to have you back in Chico. So speaking of that, you've been back in Chico. You've been here a few days. Why don't you give us a little bit of context around, you know, what's been going on?
Well, I'm trying to go out and figure out sort of what's next. What's the vision for the future? And since I was here last time and since you and I've talked before, the federal issues are really overtaking everybody across the country. I mean, that's not unique to Chico. And the comments Ed made earlier are right on. I mean, we got this is going to become such a crisis very, very fast. And even people who don't understand there's a problem now will visually start to see a problem real quick. When you have a housing authority that says we're freezing vouchers, not growing, not staying with that, not doing mm-hmm. what we had talked about last time needing to do, is a total freeze. And then what probably going to happen because and ironically these are the Obama cuts. We're not dealing with the Trump cuts yet. This is just the Obama cut, and I don't believe he wanted them. In fairness, he had to implement them because of sequestration on the budget deal.
Yeah, what I understand that Mr. Mayor was trying to say was they're going to freeze it, and then there was like a 5%, and so that would be a 5% impact because their right. costs have gone up.
Right.
So that was his best case scenario. Was like nothing would happen based upon the last administration. Best case scenario, and with best case scenario, he's had to stop giving vouchers with the best case scenario.
But he, as many people around the country, are going to start to face the reality, we've never had this in the country, do we actually kick people out of places? That has never happened before. And that's what many housing authorities in America are looking at right now, just with the prior cuts. This is not the Trump cuts are so draconian that just go beyond.
Yeah.
Those cuts, I don't think people fully grasp what they will mean mm-hmm. until you start to see what happens in the streets.
I do see and have practical experience of how well Ed runs the housing authority, but I know there's other housing authorities that are in much more dire straits financially. And thank you for bringing that up. We might have to kick people out of houses. That would be
insane. And that's nationwide.
Yeah,
and that
nationwide.
Never
exactly.
happened. Yeah. And unfortunately, the incoming administration, at least what it said on health care, it's willing to take people that have health care and take you off of health care. Whether you agree or disagree, that's their point of view. So if you're willing to do that in health care, are you going to be willing to do that in housing? And so what people need, regardless of your political view of the spectrum, what the Fed cuts are so draconian, they are going to impact local communities in a huge, huge way.
Yeah, one piece I'd like to land on from Ed Mayer's piece that we just aired. I made some prompt questions, and here they are. I really liked a lot of the words he had around attitudinal impact. I like that word. That's a really good word to kind of talk about, you know, folks not wanting to build low-income housing or whatever other reasons. Maybe you could expand and give us some more contrast on the attitudes of affordable housing and how you see it affecting Butte County.
And I think the Chico Butte County issues here are pretty very similar. They're very similar to the whole California overall number. And you got two problems. You got the one that Ed described, which is the attitudes of bringing in new development. That's one part. The other part, that the whole state of California now has 1% vacancy. 1% vacancy. That's just crazy. And so regardless of attitudes and everything, if you are not building new housing stock to take care of the needs, what that does is supply and demand. It pushes the rates up so high. And so when HUD gives Ed a 95% cut and his rental rates are going up 5 to 10%, that's really a 90% cut, meaning the numbers. Mm-hmm. And that's why you're going to see nationwide many housing authorities this cycle having to, the first time ever, not catch up through attrition. You know, mm-hmm. They just don't refill when one opens. You're going to have to start saying, I'm pushing you out of housing. I'm taking that family out of housing. I'm taking Mr. Smith out of housing. I'm taking Ms. Lopez out of housing. Yeah. And that has never happened before in our country.
Just to clarify, because it's easy to make a misplaced word, but you said a 95% cut. It was like he got a 95% budget.
Yeah.
Thank gosh he didn't have a cut.
Ed and I had a conversation the other day where we were talking about what a cut when you go up and down is. But when we say 95%, so it's a 5% cut,
yeah.
A 95% base budget. But the other thing is, he has two other factors. He has to get to 95% by December on average.
Yep.
So that means he has to undercut it, and then he has to be able to adjust for inflation. So yeah. He has a very, very hard issues, and his group does in front of him.
Yeah, it must be really hard on that group, knowing that they're not housing anyone for the foreseeable future. It's absurd. I had another prompt. I mean, we've already covered this enough, but, you know, just the comments on freezing Section 8 possibly through 2017. Why don't we just wrap that one if you got any additional?
Well, I'll point out the future. Remember, the first round of cuts that they have for HUD is the first round of cuts. The plan that Trump talked about in the campaign, and whether you like him or not, he seems to try to push his campaign promises out the door, is it calls for an escalating cut that builds over each year for 7 years. And so this is just year one. And remember, the cuts that Ed talked about in his future prior piece are the cuts that are coming under the sequestration of the prior administration. So you're going to have that cut, then you're going to have the Trump year one cut, and then you're going to have a Trump year two cut. And so this is a massive, massive problem. The whole country is facing it. Everybody's facing it, and we got to deal with reality. And that's why some of the ideas that are coming out of Sacramento and the legislature, if they can get to reality, is where you're going to have to patch. But I would also not want to be too Pollyannish. We need that just to fill the gaps what the feds are going to cut. That's not going to probably be net new. That's probably just going to keep us at the same place.
Yeah, floating. Not to get into the politics, but I think it was Bannon that had talked about, you know, unraveling the entire administrative portion of the government. That's not the exact quote, but as you had said, whether you like him or not, he's going to try to do everything that comes out of his mouth, and he talks a lot. So, right? I think it's for our listeners, though, we really need to kind of push back and kind of go, wait a minute here. This is what the impact is on our communities that are already desperately, desperately struggling. And I just feel when you had mentioned that this is a nationwide problem, Robert, I really felt blessed and at the same time kind of go, we live in a good state. I mean, it's a wealthy state. It's one of the wealthiest in the country. It's one of the most progressives in the country. But folks, just tuning in to 90.1 FM, you are listening to the Without a Roof radio program as we interview Robert Marbit, a nationally recognized homeless consultant who's visiting Chico, California on an invite from the board of directors of the Jesus Center.
It's one of the wealthiest states of the world.
It is one of the. Exactly. You know, I can't even imagine what the impact will be on like the Alabamas, the Louisianas, the states that they don't have that
48, 49.
The wealth. Yeah, they don't have the wealth. Maybe you could comment on that a little bit.
Well, I travel a lot internationally. Part of that's because of my pro bono work. Part of it is because of my faith work. And what strikes me is you go to some impoverished countries and you see what's going on there. And then you go to places like Alabama, Louisiana. I've even been to one city in California. I'm not going to name the name on the air, that feels just like those foreign countries in some parts. And we're supposed to be different. We're supposed to be better. And there's one city south of here that when I went to, I felt like I was in Uruguay or Paraguay or the dung heaps up in Brazil. Yeah. And we're in California.
Maybe speak a bit to the spike in homelessness and maybe put a little contrast around it. Because Ed, when I first met him 4 years ago, talked about this, but I think the scale of it's expanding. You have a beautiful community here in Chico, and our housing, you know, rates, our median rates are a lot lower than if you live in the Bay Area or other places. We got people coming in here to retire. And I know people that were formerly homeless living in trailer parks that were literally kind of evicted so they could upgrade them and bring in new clients. So anyway, the whole spike in homelessness, what's your comments on that?
Well, I think the first thing we have to do is we have to start reducing the number, because if you don't, you can't build your way out. There's not enough money. And so you got to get after the root causes of whatever is causing the homeless. And everybody has different root causes. And so to me, it's not just the housing cuts that the feds scare me. It's the mental health cut within the health care bill. It is the HHS funds being cut. It's the substance abuse funding programs. To me, those are almost more dangerous in the world of homelessness, because that means you stop addressing the root causes and our numbers are going to grow. And all the preliminary information shows the numbers are growing California-wide. That's been about a three-year trend. And part of that is a lot of the housing first type programs are being outstripped by the rental rate. You know, whatever the governmental subsidy is not keeping up with the rental rate. And so then people are left. If you're running a program, you have to decide, do I want to keep the roof or am I going to cut the counselors in order to keep the same amount of people housed? And so they're now cutting the counselors and the support systems, and now we're eating our own children. I mean, we really are. We're eating our future. We're destroying our future when we do that. And if we don't start to be able to properly fund and manage and work on the root causes, this problem is going to be an epidemic 5 or 6 years from now, and then everybody's going to want to solve it then. But by then, it's going to be more cost-effective, much more hard pain and suffering of the individuals and their families, and the destructions to doing it, it will do to communities. And I generally find that the best way to go for the conservative votes in support of this is remind folks that if we don't take care of this, it's going to get a lot worse later. It's going to be more expensive later, and it's going to hurt the community that you live in, the fabric of the community.
All right, Robert Marvin. I want to make sure I'll be able to slip this in, because I was able to give one of these to Lloyd Pendleton. This is a film festival I put together. It's just a gift for you. But I put to Robert Marvin, we agree on housing for all and homelessness is not a crime. Safe travels and blessings. Bill Mash.
All that's right.
For
you. Thank you.
I want to also give you, we brought a street newspaper to Sacramento, and we all got right. A whole page that we're going to be doing on the situation in Chico. So I wanted you to have those two things.
Thank you.
You can read those on the plane.
I'll read them tonight.
And then I actually interviewed Howard Hardeed, had a wonderful front page article two editions of the Weekly ago, all about housing. It's really well.
Did you see that one? Ed gave that to me.
It's a great article.
Ed gave that to me. I haven't read it yet, but he just gave it to me this morning, and I'm going to read it tonight.
So any closing comments? And before I say closing comments, we're going to do a longer form interview either right now to air later or at a later date with Robert Marbit. But any closing comments around this whole housing and Butte County?
I think the key is people now need to realize we have to solve this problem locally. And if that means the state won't do it, you have to handle it at a county level. And I think the counties are going to be critical. Communities are going to be critical. The community is going to be critical. And so will Sacramento. But this is no longer going to be solved. In fact, I'm going the opposite. Our situations are going to be much worse because of what's going on in Washington. It's not only are they not going to help us, they're going to push down a problem that's going to make things so much worse for our community. And if we don't solve it locally, it's only going to be tragic in 4 or 5 years. We're going to have a problem in our streets, and everybody's going to wake up and go, what happened? And you're going to have a radio show like this, sadly, to go back and say, we knew this was coming.
All right, Robert. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right. That was Dr. Robert Marbit, who was visiting Chico on an invite from the Jesus Center. Thank you, Robert Marbit. Thank you for Ed Mayer, Executive Director of Housing Authority of the County of Butte, who led our show. Archive will be up soon. And you can find Without a Roof. Our homepage is woaroof.tumblr.com. We can also be found on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube channel. Until next week, if you have a roof, be grateful. Next up is Non-Human Radio, 5:30 to 6 and 6 to 7 p.m. is The Real Issue here.